Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is one of my favorite people in the whole world, Mike Spain, associate editor for the Albany Times Union. It's really the vortex of the way the Capital Region is covered. Mike is in charge of making sure that everybody does their job under their wonderful editor, Rex Smith, who you have met before. In any case, Mike, thanks for being with us. The big story of the year, of course, in Albany government, there really is only one story, and it's Andrew Cuomo. How's he doing?
Well, you know, he dominates the news. He's a very powerful governor who is very controlling of the message. And from the media's perspective, he certainly has brought many of the public relations people who work for the various state agencies into line. And the message is consistent and sometimes very difficult to get a random answer out of anybody. You really have to look to the second floor of the state capitol to find out what's going on. But, you know, it's a big year for him. It started out right away with his passage of the SAFE Act. Of course, that was the controversial bill that continues to be debated by both sides in the legislature. People want to amend it. People want it to be completely thrown out. But it was passed just a couple of weeks after the tragedy at Sandy Hook in Connecticut. And it limits the amount of bullets that can be in a magazine in an assault weapon. It also limits the sale of certain assault weapons. And it will require people who own assault weapons to register them by April of 2014. And he took a lot of hits for that, but it was a courageous act, I think you've said before.
I have.
Yeah. And it's also been a year of scandals in state government. And to address that, the governor in July, with having not been able to get a campaign finance reform package through the legislative session, announced the formation of a Moreland Act commission to look into the way that campaigns are conducted in New York State and to recommend remedies. And they came out with a preliminary report earlier this month, and they're going to continue their work into the new year and come out with a final set of recommendations that suggest public financing of campaigns and more transparency and some limits on campaign contributions. But that seems to be the big story as we go into 2014, and it probably will be addressed early in the new year when the governor unveils his agenda.
There is, to me, a question with Andrew Cuomo, which is, does he want the issue? In other words, does he want to be seen as the man who will clean up Albany, or does he really want to clean it up? For example, you just mentioned the this concept of public financing of campaigns. Well, there are those of us who have seen him lately, on the news and other places, stepping back from that.
Are you referring to his $30 million war chest?
I'm talking about his own $30 million. I mean, he had Billy Joel, that wonderful singer, give a concert for him and charge $50,000 for the top tickets. $50,000. Now, how can you talk about, out of one side, out of your mouth, of being for some kind of rational campaign approach, and then at the same time having people charging? Why would anybody give you $50,000 if they don't want something from you?
Well, in all fairness, you have one system in place right now that's predicated on, you know, the requirement to raise a lot of money if you want to be reelected. And you have to play that game until you can get the other.
That's what he would say, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think there's some validity to that. I mean, what's he going to do? Just drop out of the game and not raise money and not be ready? Because I don't think there's going to be any public financing of the gubernatorial campaign in 2014. So he's ready to play it by the current rules of the game, and it will give him maybe the onus in his, if he's successful in reelection, and the polls would indicate that he has a very good chance to be reelected, especially if he has a $30 million campaign war chest, you know, then he can pursue that in his second term.
I see. Well, while we don't absolutely agree on it, it certainly is the rationale I'm sure he would offer, Mike, for his approach. You know, you did mention his potential election and looking forward to 2014. Mm-hmm. There is a question as to who his opponent will be. my feeling about this is if it's Andrew's second term, you know, if people see it, then he has a, you know, he'll get in. But if they see it as Mario's fifth term, that would be a different story.
But you would be, you know, the expert on this.
Indeed.
Your familiarity with his father's administration probably is unsurpassed by anybody's. Hasn't he distanced himself in his actions from his father's policies in many ways?
Yeah, I mean, he came in riding a horse which had on it Clinton. I mean, Clinton was his mentor in that he chose him for the cabinet, probably because of the father's status at the time. And Clinton, of course, was elected as a conservative. A lot of people don't remember that. A fiscal conservative and an educational reformer, by the way. And Andrew apparently said, I'll have some of that. Came in, and that was his way of approaching his government. However, with all the talk about taxes and everything else, into New York City, half the state, comes the election of Bill de Blasio as the new mayor, who immediately says, let's tax the rich, which is contrary to the Cuomo message.
Yes, it's going to be interesting to see how the governor of New York gets along with the new mayor of New York City. Because, you know, in 2014, it's expected that the governor will push heavily for a broad property tax cut and try to give relief to residents all across the state. They're talking about something in the area of $2 billion. This was the recommendation of a commission that he set up that included the former governor.
The man who beat his father.
The man that beat his father, Republican Governor George Pataki.
Yeah.
Right. And Carl McCall, another former political adversary of Andrew Cuomo, who had been an ally of Mario Cuomo. And they are recommending tax cuts at a time that Bill de Blasio is coming into office saying enough is enough. It's time that the rich start paying their share and we need to help the people who are not wealthy in New York City, which are, you know, they say 40% of New York City qualify at the poverty level or below.
Isn't that something? And there isn't a single apartment.
Yeah.
There is probably isn't a single apartment that is easily got in Manhattan.
Certainly in the island of Manhattan. Yeah. And it's doing great things for Queens, though. You know.
Yeah. Yes. There's a certain displacement. People move from one place to
Brooklyn
another.
Brooklyn is getting too expensive. The Manhattanization of Brooklyn is happening. And that's where Bill de Blasio, the new mayor, is from. Well, it'll just be a very interesting thing to watch. He's very different than his predecessor, Mayor Mike Bloomberg.
So here comes de Blasio, the new mayor. And the one thing he says, which is very attractive, is every child should have pre-K, because we know that all the studies show that when you have pre-kindergarten classes for a kid, their chances for success go up way up in life, as well as things like not going to prison eventually, so that there are a lot of indicators. Okay, you're the guest. I'll ask you the question.
Well,
and if you don't get it right,
I don't get it right, why don't you correct me?
So the question is this. How does Andrew Cuomo square his tax cutting with Bill de Blasio's pre-K?
Well, you said it. That is the question. How are we going to pay for pre-K? And yet pre-K has been proven to be so successful. It's the best investment you can make.
Sure.
And you have it at a time when the governor is facing re-election and wanting to hand back some tax breaks all across the board. So that will be a defining debate. But they need each other. You know, the governor of New York needs support and help of the New York City mayor, and the New York City mayor absolutely needs Albany and the governor to support New York City. So there may be some room there for some progress in getting pre-K, universal pre-K across New York State, which I think everyone would agree if it could be afforded, it would be a very good thing. It's how to pay for it.
I'm going to guarantee you this. This is a prediction that Andrew Cuomo will find a way of paying for pre-K and getting his tax cuts at the same time.
Yeah, you know, if he's as clever as he's been so far, he may actually come up with a way to do that. But it's going to have to come from some other place, and that will be the challenge. You know, whether cities are going to lose money, you know, it's going to be a tough year for cities. You know, pension payments are the big issue hanging over all cities, public pension payments.
How does that get resolved?
You know, I wish I had an answer for that. That's a really good question. Over long term, the pensions are not as they're not as favorable as they were maybe back in the 80s and 90s. The
Sure.
state and localities are not giving as generous a pension to newer hires. But the people who are now retired and the people who will retire in the next 10 years are they're guaranteed to get these pensions that they worked hard for. It was the terms of their employment. And
but they may die sooner or later, and therefore new deals will come on.
Well, new deals will eventually, you know, an actuary would sit and track out how many years would have to go by before the cities will see some real relief from these newer, less generous pensions. But can cities even survive without strong support from the state?
I have a single word, Detroit, in which pensions or places like Greece and Italy were taken away.
Well, the fear, of course, is whether Detroit will actually be able to renegotiate the pensions that were already quote-unquote guaranteed to their employees, their firemen, their policemen, and their other public employees. And if they're able to change those terms after the fact, that might open the way for other municipalities to do it. And this is what a lot of, you know, people in the public union, labor union sectors are fearing and fighting. So maybe there will be, when Detroit actually plays out, there'll be some area for compromise, and that could give some relief to cities. But that's a big challenge in New York State. The city is upstate and even downstate.
Now, Mayor de Blasio has been rumored to be a very big friend of the unions who were helpful to him in his progressive campaign.
I don't think it's a rumor.
Yes. And now he has to come back and finish up the contractual obligations that the city has, which it hasn't done anything with. So what does he do? He's between a rock and a hard place, isn't he?
Well, he does have a good relationship with the public employee unions, and that does give him the opportunity to at least talk about it. He has a relationship, and that's where it begins, but it's going to be a tough fight. Nobody wants to give back already earned credits for pensions, and that's probably what cities would be asking for to get through this.
Mike, talk to us a little bit, if you would, about the casino issue in New York State.
As you know, New Yorkers did pass a constitutional amendment which will allow for several casinos, seven over a period of time in upstate and eventually down in the New York City metro area. And in the first 6 months of the year, the state is going to, the Gaming and Wagering Board is going to set up the criteria that applicants will have to meet to apply for licenses, and then the process will roll out in mid-2014, and they're hoping that they can be awarding licenses by the end of the new year. So that would mean construction would begin, and we'd get to see whether it's really going to be the panacea that it's been described as by some who supported casino gaming.
Well, Mike Spain, you're on the editorial board of the Albany Times Union. What has been the position of the editorial board on this?
Well, prior to the November ballot, we took a position that said New York doesn't need casino gambling. There were already casinos available, and we didn't see it in really being a plus overall. We agreed with the opponents of casino gambling that its negative effects on society are greater than the benefits that it would reap. But, you know, now that it's been passed and the voters have spoken, what we want to see is that local communities have active involvement in the selection process and that it not be forced down the throats of any local communities. In the capital region, for example, Saratoga Springs.
A horse racing mecca.
Right, a horse racing mecca, 150 years of thoroughbred racing in Saratoga Springs in 2013, is pushing itself, or some people in Saratoga Springs are pushing a site at the already existing raceway, the Saratoga Raceway, and it's a racino, which has video lottery terminals, which were already allowed under law, and they want to expand that to make it a full Las Vegas-style casino. And yet, during the in the November balloting, city residents actually voted against having the constitutional amendment, which would allow casino gambling, and Saratoga County voted against it. The only county in the capital region to vote in favor of it was Rensselaer County, which is to the east of Albany, and there's some developers looking at a site right across from downtown Albany. So, you know, people who live in these communities should get to make the decisions. And then when they do roll it out, they need to make sure that problem gamblers get addressed. There are efforts to have some of the funding of these casinos go towards programs to help problem gamblers. And we want to see that the money that's made at these casinos goes back into the communities that want them.
I have to say that I live in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and I sure as hell wouldn't want one in my town. So We'll just have to see how that all plays out. The FAA has said it's time for drones. Now, I have to say I have searched assiduously to figure out, and New York State has been tapped as one of those states where the drone experiments around Syracuse and some of those places will be allowed. You know, Mike, you're so much smarter than I am, but what, in fact, would a drone be used for?
Well, how about surveillance along the New York State Thruway to catch speeders?
Yeah.
You know, it could become a moneymaker, I suppose, if that happened. There used to be airplanes that would go up over the Thruway, but they cut that out because it was too expensive. But it could monitor that. Drones could also
deliver packages.
Well, deliver packages. Jeff Bezos of Amazon.com says that he would envision that down the future. But more immediately, it probably would be used by police agencies for surveillance, maybe by land surveyors to do better surveys of the land and to aid in the, you know, fighting of forest fires. You know, there's a whole bunch of convenient uses you can think of if they could ever get them to be accurate and not too expensive. And I guess that won't happen until they're able to experiment. It'll probably create a lot of jobs. So that's a good thing. It's going to be based at the Griffiths International Airport, which is the former Griffiths Air Force Base. So it'll bring perhaps some good jobs to the area of Rome, New York, which could certainly use it. It's one of those small
cities.
All
roads lead there.
Yeah, all roads lead to Rome, New York. Yeah. That's right. So did the Erie Canal back then.
It's just so everybody should be forewarned that they probably ought not to be walking around with anybody who is not their significant other. There's always this.
Well, once they become available to the general public, I think the private detection business will be revolutionized by drones.
Well, no, I think you're probably right. There's a subliminal war that many people think they see between the governor and the legislature, particularly between the Democratic governor, Andrew Cuomo, and the Democratic speaker, Sheldon Silver. Have you observed any of this?
Well, certainly there's tension there. You know, the governor has put a lot of pressure on the speaker. The speaker has been under, and we're talking about Sheldon Silver, has been under a lot of pressure this year trying to clean up the debacle that was created by the efforts to keep quiet the Vito Lopez scandal. That's where he, an assemblyman from Brooklyn, was accused by staffers of groping and other sexual misconduct. And rather than air it publicly, a private settlement was worked out that the speaker approved. He later apologized for that and said it was the wrong way to handle it.
And that was taxpayer money, right?
And that was partial taxpayer money. Vito Lopez paid about a third of the $100,000, a little more than $100,000 settlement.
Did he pay it out of his campaign funds?
Actually, I don't know. Yeah. He may have been able to do that. Isn't that a wonderful world? We need some campaign finance reform. But in any event, you know, just like we were saying that the governor needs the mayor of New York City, the governor certainly needs to have a working relationship with the Speaker of the Assembly. Shelley Silver survived some calls for his resignation after, you know, the Vito Lopez debacle, and he remains strong, it looks like, and he goes into the new year strong, and they have a lot of common interests. His district is based in Lower Manhattan, so again, there's going to be need for compromise. What will be interesting in the new year is what the relationship the governor has with Jeff Klein and his...
I was going to mention that.
The Republicans, who are allied with the Democratic coalition to jointly lead the state Senate. Will that survive in the new year? The governor has let that happen. He hasn't tried to go out and campaign on behalf of Democratic candidates for state Senate. He might be under a lot of pressure to do that from the Democrats, and the Democrats could take full control of the state Senate if that were to happen, and that would kind of erase the deal that Jeff Klein and a few other Democrats have made with the Republicans who control the state Senate. And if that were to happen, that would really shift the dynamic. If you had a Democratic Senate and you had a Democratic Assembly and a Democratic governor, it could change things in the state capitol.
There are those of us who think that Andrew Cuomo, more than just letting it happen, that the Republicans are still in control, was really sort of by design part of the engineer of that.
Well, it's quite useful to have this combination control of the state Senate. It's not always a good thing to have everybody on your side. Bill Clinton, of course, made great use of having a Republican House of Representatives. It would be interesting on the national level if the president could do that now, but it's a different set of dynamics. But in Albany, playing one against the other isn't always such a bad thing, and governors have learned how to manipulate that. And I think Governor Rockefeller was was great at handling that. And they say that nobody since Rockefeller has done it as well as Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo.
There's nothing like having a lot of money like Rockefeller did in order to help you on your way, or Bloomberg.
Right. And Rockefeller had a lot of, he had his own private money the way Mayor Bloomberg did. There was a fascinating story that came out in the past week that Mayor Bloomberg spent an awful lot of his own cash just to operate his office, you know, to fly around in his private plane, to provide bagels and nosh for his staff. All these things are going to disappear. The new mayor won't have a deep pocket to reach into to just make working for his administration like working for a private tech company. You know, it'll be very different.
In Syracuse, New York, there is a gutsy mayor, Stephanie Miner, who stood up to Cuomo on the way in which he was allowing localities to borrow on their future. I mean, I think that was basically the big fight.
The big issue,
And she was the co-chair of the state Democratic Party. It still is. And a lot of people's eyebrows went up because there's a general rule. You don't fool with Andrew Cuomo and still remain,
but she was,
vertical.
She was strongly reelected in Syracuse. She's very popular. She's representing a faction of the Democratic Party that it probably wouldn't be good for the governor to alienate. It's a large faction.
To say nothing of the fact that she's a woman and a progressive woman.
A progressive, and she's a woman. And so it's an interesting dynamic. She's one to watch, and that will certainly put pressure on, again, that would put pressure on the governor to support Democratic candidates for the state Senate, which could shift that whole dynamic around.
You know, Mike Spade, I'm very proud of our state, New York, which is mine by birth, and the fact that we have a governor who has a partner who he is not married to. We have a mayor who is leaving office, same thing. Are New Yorkers getting a little bit more open in terms of their willingness to say there are different ways to do it than the old ways?
Well, at least it's no pretense. You're not having these, historically,
here in Albany, we knew something about that.
Yeah, I mean, popular politicians would have girlfriends and everybody would know, but they never would talk about it, et cetera, et cetera. I think today there's a lot of a lot more acceptance of relationships, whatever they may be, and Mayor Bloomberg certainly proved that, and Governor Cuomo certainly proved that, and I don't think anybody, there's probably a small group of people who don't like it or are less comfortable with it, but I just don't see it being an issue in 2014.
And then finally, I wanted to ask you something about the new Pope. And
he's not from New York.
No, but his seemingly progressive approach, and I know the Times Union covers religion, has the Pope Francis effect come down to religious officials in New York State that you can see?
Yes, I think it will have a direct impact in that Cardinal Dolan, who is the Pope's man in New York, has an enormous amount of influence, and he has the ear of the governor, and he has the ear of politicians.
But he's always sort of been seen as somewhat of a conservative fellow.
He has been conservative. He was getting his cues from the Vatican, and now he's getting his cues from the Vatican, and the Vatican is less conservative. And I saw him interviewed at Christmas, on national TV, and he's carrying the message of the much more moderate pontiff. He wants to see, the Pope has said that the biggest discrepancy that he sees and the biggest problem in the world is the poverty. And yet there's all this wealth and there's all this poverty. Well, that's certainly an issue in New York City, in New York State, and Dolan is waving the flag, and Dolan is an influential person in New York politics.
And I think in the politics of the whole church.
Absolutely. He's one of the guys they said was on the short list to become the new pope. And, maybe he's young. He could still be it one day.
Well, Mike Spain, our guest, the associate editor of the Albany Times-Union, and truly, as I'm sure you can all hear, one of the most thoughtful and great of our contemporary journalists. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.